My dad was an amazing and patient waiter. No, not a restaurant server, but a person who was able to wait. I'm not sure if it was by nature or if it was because he was married to my mother. My mother loved to shop. Not to buy so much, but she liked to look at everything, and I mean everything, in the store. My dad would retire to a bench outside, or maybe in the mall, and wait. Some of my favorite memories are sitting with him hand in hand and learning how to wait. People watching mostly, but waiting, being in the moment, not tapping his foot or wanting to be somewhere else doing something or getting something done, but just being there in that moment, waiting. There weren't mobile phones back then, so you just sat in the moment, watching and waiting. Because of those wonderful lessons at his side, I find that as I get older, I get better at waiting. On occasion, I will now pull out my mobile and maybe scroll through Pinterest and look for a new quilt pattern or a new hobby to take up. But rarely, especially if I don't have any Wi-Fi. I love to sit quietly, listening to the monkey chatter in my head, or watch the wind blow the clouds around the sky, to appreciate the moment when, due to whatever circumstance that it might be at that time, I'm able to be not being able to go and do, buy, or rush around. Held mostly captive in that short space of time to breathe, ponder, rejuvenate, and simply wait. Toward the end of my dad's life, I would call him on the phone and say, "Hey, Dad, what are you doing?" Being the character that he was, he would simply answer, "Waiting for God." I think in a nutshell, that pretty much just says it all. We are all waiting for God in one form or another. As we move into this season of parties, shopping, eating, and festivities, I'd like to take as much time as I can to sit, patiently waiting, in those quiet moments for a brief touch and experience of God. I frequently have to stop and remind myself that God is around me all the time, in those moments as brief as a hummingbird pausing to suck the nectar, or hearing children laughter as they play, watching an elderly couple walk down the street hand in hand. I don't have to wait. I have to be aware and mindful at the time that the touch and experience of God surrounds me all the time, envelops me, comforts me in that moment without waiting.
We have a reading this morning which is a poem entitled Fresh, written in the early 2000s by Naomi Shihab Nye, a Palestinian-American poet who lives in San Antonio, Texas. Fresh. To move cleanly, needing to be nowhere else, wanting nothing from any store, to lift something you already had and set it down in a new place, awakened eye seeing freshly. What does that do to the old blood moving through its channels? This sermon starts out with a rant and ends with an invitation. This is the ranting part. I've been holding on to it since 2005. When a right-wing host on the Fox News Channel wrote a book entitled The War on Christmas, in his book and on his TV show, John Gibson argued that secular culture in general and American liberals in particular were out to ban Christmas as a sacred and religious holiday. Along with other white and mostly male promoters of outrage on television, John Gibson focused on various legal challenges to the display of nativity scenes on town squares, courthouse lawns, and other public places. These legal challenges were not really for the defense of the separation of church and state, he said. No, such cases were liberal attempts to suppress religious expression. With shrill voices and weak evidence, he and comrades like Bill O'Reilly, the now dethroned but still wealthy Fox News host, blared about the trend of sales clerks at shopping malls and big box retailers to offer cheers of happy holidays to their customers instead of saying the age-old Merry Christmas. What blasphemy. Happy holidays. Gibson and Company stirred up a lot of anger, which is always good for book sales. Yet in choosing to bash liberals and atheists, they chose not to lay a hand on the machine of merchandising around Christmas. Indeed, you need only open the newspaper or log into the internet for evidence that consumer capitalism does more than anything else to diminish the message of Jesus around Christmas. In the Bible, when he's an adult, Jesus of Nazareth calls people to give up wealth and possessions in order to follow him. What God wants, he says, is for us to care for the weak, hungry, and vulnerable of our world. Perhaps consumerism is the true enemy of keeping Christ in Christmas. I'm confident there is not a war on Christmas. It's too profitable to kill off. Yet I see plenty of evidence of a war on Advent. Covering the four Sundays before Christmas, Advent is a time of anticipating the birth of Jesus every year. The season of Advent goes back at least to the year 567, when Christian monks had to fast in the weeks leading up to Christmas. Yet its current and familiar observance began in Europe in the 1800s, when German-speaking peoples began counting down the days till Christmas with an Advent calendar, each day with a different image. They also lighted four candles on an Advent wreath, with a new candle added on each of the four Sundays leading up to Christmas. Spiritually speaking, Advent is a season of anticipation and preparation. When it concludes, there's a big feast and the candle-infused celebration of the 12 days of Christmas. These go until January 6, which is Epiphany. Historians have noted that the holiday of Christmas has always been a hodgepodge celebration in Europe and the United States. There has never been one pure way to observe the birth of Jesus. Furthermore, for centuries, people have made money around the holiday. Yet Advent could be counted on to provide balance, spiritual balance. It was a time of slowing down, a time of reflection, seeking inner peace, and looking forward. Advent wasn't meant to be a shopping season, but that's what it's become. Ever since department stores and catalog showrooms came on the scene, the massive engines of merchandising have stirred North Americans to speed up the pace of shopping and spending earlier and earlier before Christmas. In his book, The War on Christmas, Gibson casts the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, as a leader of the anti-Christian, anti-Christmas forces. I did a word search. In his book, the word Christian appears 132 times. The initials of his chosen enemy, ACLU, appear as a word 61 times. Yet the words consumerism or capitalism appear not once. The word Christmas appears 168 times, as you might expect. Yet it would be nice to see a mention of Advent since it lasts 4 weeks. Yet Advent appears nowhere in the book. Whatever kind of religion we might identify with, even if it's no religion, If we wish to consider the spiritual invitation of Advent amid the roar of the Christmas machine, we will have to be intentional about it. We will have to choose our own opportunities for slowing down. The culture in which we live will demand only that we speed up, do more, do it all, and seem to be happy about it all, no matter what. We will have to choose for ourselves, choose to cultivate the spiritual practice of waiting, anticipation, expectation, getting ready. Waiting is a spiritual practice. The late Peter Fleck was a banker who became a UU minister late in his life and wrote books on spirituality. He wrote, "The quality of our lives depends on the spiritual mood in which we wait. The quality of our lives depends on the spiritual mood in which we wait." There are so many kinds of waiting. There's waiting for your date for coffee to show up, for your hairstylist or barber to bring you to the chair, for a nurse to call you out of the waiting room. There's waiting in line to check out of the grocery store, to go through the toll booth on the bridge, to get into a concert or movie. With a twinkle in her eye, a friend of mine said, "There's an element of waiting that I have in the time between I place an order online from my bed until it arrives in a smiley-faced Amazon box at my doorstep." To be sure, waiting can be annoying. It can be boring. Waiting can put us face to face with our impatience. At a table in a restaurant, we're waiting to be served our meal. With growing frustration, we note the large table of happy, loud people who came in after us and got served before we even ordered. In the moment, it can seem like an outrage. In the grand scheme of things, I don't know. But it is an invitation to practice waiting. Yet it seems that if we can look at the suffering of so many people in waiting situations, we can consider ourselves lucky and privileged to be merely annoyed by having to wait. For example, in contrast to waiting for a traffic jam to clear or a red light to turn green, I am not waiting in line for an immigration official to consider my appeal for asylum. Too many desperate migrant parents and fearful children are waiting for asylum 4 months at the southern U.S. border. They are waiting for mercy, waiting for safety. Around the globe, at border checkpoints or in refugee camps, migrants are waiting to find out their fate. And I don't have to do that kind of waiting. Nor am I the parent of a student activist waiting to find out what happened when their child was disappeared by the police or their country's military. These are kinds of waiting we wouldn't wish on anybody. Given such cruel kinds of waiting that our human kin must endure, we should not wait very long to hear the moral call to help, to extend a hand, send money, write a letter, register voters, speak out, do whatever to raise the alarm that people are suffering from injustice. Let us insist, let us demand that suffering people not be made to wait any longer for their day of liberation. Even if we are privileged and lucky not to have to wait in an agonizing situation, we know that waiting can be stressful. Waiting often involves uncertainty. It can be exhausting. There's waiting for a child's adoption process to be finalized. There's waiting for a baby to be born. There's waiting for conception to happen. There's waiting to grow up and grow old. Waiting for the kids to move away, waiting for them to come back. Yet waiting can also be full of possibilities for deepening our lives. When a person is in the last weeks or days of life, or in the last hours of life. There is often a vigil by caregivers, friends, or loved ones sitting by the bed. A vigil. There may or may not be more communication from the person who is dying. They may not always know we're there. Yet the presence we offer makes a difference. This kind of waiting is poignant. We'll remember it for a long time. Usually the point of this kind of waiting is not to look forward to the end of it. The point is the moments we spend in being present, in showing respect for the person, and in reflecting on their life and ours. In such a time of watching over another person, in such a vigil, the kind of waiting we do is both simple and profound. Waiting has its own shape, its own feel. Waiting is its own experience with its own opportunities and challenges. It need not be the dues we have to pay to obtain what comes after waiting. It can be its own experience. Planting a garden and then tending it, setting out plates and silverware for dinner guests coming later, decorating your apartment or house for any holiday or new season, all of these are actions of preparation, and they are all full experiences on their own. As the late Peter Fleck wrote, the quality of our lives depends on the spiritual mood in which we wait. Judging from all the cooking competitions on television and so many recipes on the internet, it's clear that preparing food from scratch is widely popular in this country. For many people who have the time to do it, it seems better to make it yourself than to use a mix or buy it already prepared. And much of the time that's required is time spent in waiting, especially for those who bake bread. There's actual effort, of course, but you also have to wait for it to rise, and then you have to wait for it to bake. Many folks have spoken about the meditative qualities of the time they take in making breads, jams, soups, sauces, or other foods. They work with patience, but also with anticipation. These activities are examples of the spiritual practice of waiting. The poet Naomi Shihab Nye wrote this poem. Fresh, to move cleanly, needing to be nowhere else, wanting nothing from any store, to lift something you already had and set it down in a new place. Awakened eye, seeing freshly. What does that do to the old blood moving through its channels? How can we hope that familiar aspects of our days will appear to us a little more freshly? How can we perceive the ordinary traits of our lives in awakened and fresh ways? This is a reason for waiting. Do we keep our stuff in the same old places or set it down in a new place? Or do we keep our lives in the same old places? How can we tell if we don't pause, wait, breathe, and reflect? To lift something you already had and set it down in a new place, awakened eye, seeing freshly. It feels like a long time since I've had that awakened eye kind of experience, in the sense of a grand, eye-opening, new moment of a fresh start. Yet on most days, I do try to take a few minutes to ask to see things freshly. I start by noticing the contact of my familiar body on the familiar hard chair as if it were a new sensation, which in that moment of awareness it is. I try to pause like this to help me to remember, to see, and feel the day's events in an attentive way, in a fresh way, if I'm lucky. This month here at UUSS, we have a few activities to invite you to enjoy the journey of December. Not too many things, no need to feel overwhelmed by it. There's the communion this afternoon and the holiday party on Friday. On Wednesday, the 11th of December, there's a Vesper service at 6 p.m. And our outdoor labyrinth is open every day, rain or shine. The new movie, Welcome to the Neighborhood, is the ideal movie for Advent. So ideal that both of your ministers independently thought of it and thought to tell you about it. In the film, Tom Hanks plays Mr. Rogers, the children's public television host, now of beloved memory. Known for the eye contact and careful words with which he addressed his young audience, Fred Rogers showed empathy and kindness. He was an ordained minister, and the TV show was his ministry. I was a teenager. I watched it vicariously as my little nephew sat in front of the TV set. I joked and laughed at Mr. Rogers' deliberate and slow pace of speaking. But it was just right for kids. This new movie is about his relationship with a cynical reporter who is writing a profile about him for Esquire magazine. As we heard at a restaurant, before they eat, Mr. Rogers asks, "Could we pause for a minute to think about the people who have loved us into being? Don't worry, I'll keep track of the time." And they go silent for a full minute. The movie takes the full minute in real time. This means the audience is taking that same full minute too. Viewers are brought in to reflect on the same question about those who love us into being. The camera pans around the restaurant scene, and the volume of the crowd's talking goes way down. This long minute is not merely something to be gotten through before the dialogue begins again. The silence is important. The waiting we do has its own reason for being. To lift something you already had and set it down in a new place, awakened eye, seeing freshly. This is the Advent invitation for you and for me. There's four Sundays beginning today. When life seems to be rushing you too much, invite a friend or a loved one to do something with you that you could consider to be a kind of waiting. Consider your opportunities to take a long, full minute as a simple gift of peace and freshness. Notice those times when you are merely waiting. Notice your waiting and give thanks for it. So may it be. Blessed be and amen.